Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And today, I am very proud to share an author who wrote a remarkably compelling memoir touching on childhood neglect, years in foster care, and overcoming the odds to become a graduate of college. He is Adam Starks, PhD. Adam is a former foster youth who defied the typical outcome, and his experience is detailed in his autobiography, Broken Child, Mended Man. Currently, Adam is a proud husband, father, assistant professor of business and management, school board member, and volunteer, envisioning a better today for our society's most vulnerable youth. As living proof to what it takes to break the cycle, Adam offers advocacy speaking services to assist in securing resources and knowledge to assist the most disadvantaged of youth. And you can find out more at his website, adamstarks.com. And there is so much more to know about this fine man, so let's bring him on. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hi, thanks, Pat. I appreciate the introduction.
Well, I appreciate your being willing to share your story with us. I think it's extremely important, and I also have a youth-oriented radio network. It's called Those Radio Kids, and we feature interviews to inspire and give hope to young people who may be going through difficult times, and I would love to share today's conversation on that network. It's called ThoseRadioKids.com, so with your permission, I hope to be able to share it with a broader audience as well.
Yes, absolutely.
All righty. Well, I think that the best way to get started talking about your book would be to begin is for you to share your beginnings with us as a child.
Let's see, starting at the beginning, born to a mother with a ninth grade education and addicted to alcohol. Many of us know that those children aren't given much of a chance in terms of succeeding in life. Upward mobility in this country is becoming more and more challenging, and people are becoming less and less resilient. How I made it out, I'm still trying to figure that out, but starting from the beginning, in Burbank, California, the first 5 years of my life were tumultuous, but not nearly as much as it would be later on. So I started out in assisted living, I guess, in a apartment complex, and my mother never really held a job. So we were passed off to different people throughout the apartment complex. And then all of a sudden, my world was turned upside down. I mean, I did have an older sister, but she lived with her father, who had divorced from my mother before I was born. So we went out, we got on the plane, I guess our relatives bought a plane ticket, and we moved out to Virginia. Now, Burbank, California, you can envision sunshine all year round, palm trees, you know, concrete, and I moved to a farm with cows and chickens and an outhouse. So
yeah,
it was a bit, quite a culture shock there, and I never really got over my fear of chickens. one of the first things that happened off the plane was being attacked by chickens. So,
there you go.
and then being terrified of cows. I mean, they were just these huge creatures, and I'd never seen anything that large, other than, you know, the toy dogs that they had in California. So it took me quite a while to get used to the farm. But something was happening that I couldn't quite put my finger on. I knew my mother had a drinking issue. My sister and her father were always scolding her, in that apartment complex in California. But being 5 years old at the time, I just wanted to play and, do childlike things. But the onus was on me because I had two younger brothers in tow. So it was a five-year-old, three-year-old, and a infant. My brother's unknowing, Chris, and we weren't being fed. we weren't being bathed, or our clothes. We were outgrowing our clothes. There were dirty diapers, and my mother. There were beer cans laying all over the place. So something was just inherently wrong. I ended up starting kindergarten late, but one of the first things I noticed was that people were throwing away a lot of food. And so I would stuff food in my pockets, anything from green beans to chicken nuggets, whatever I could stuff in my pockets, and take that home and feed myself and my brothers. And I learned how to change diapers because I couldn't stand the smell of my infant brother. And so I just took it upon myself to take care of them the best that I could. And between kindergarten and third grade, I ended up missing 121 days of school.
Wow.
Due to being sick myself. I had bouts with pneumonia. Again, we weren't bathed properly. We had a hole in the side of our house, which was terrible to deal with in the wintertime. And, we weren't being fed properly. We were malnourished and neglected. So if I wasn't sick, then I was taking care of my brothers. I was scared for them or something, and so I just did not go to school. But I was passed along throughout this grade, so, of course, I remained behind the curve right up to the day that I was intercepted. When I was 8 years old, I was intercepted in the middle of the school day and sent to live with a white family. Now, as an African-American male, I grew up in a country. There may have been, five black people I went to school with, but we were all related, and race wasn't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
It still wasn't an issue when I moved into this home. I just knew things were very different. I was sleeping in my own bed for the first time. I was, I had food on the table, three square meals a day, and so that was all great. But the traumatizing part was being ripped away from my family.
Mm-hmm.
The only brother that came with me was Noah. And then Chris went to live with another family. And then she also had Moses, who was 8 months old at the time that we were taken away. And so I was taking care of him as well. And so all I could think of is what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, for all I knew, they were locked in a cage somewhere. But, that, of course, that wasn't the case. And but it was scary to get used to. And, again, a lot of people think, well, we're helping these children by taking them away and putting them in better homes, and they are. But the problem is they never explain that to you
mm-hmm.
as a child, and because they think you won't understand. But, I was told, my social worker told me that we were going to a movie theater, and I ended up in this strange home.
Oh.
And there was just a huge disconnect there, and that was it.
Oh.
He dropped us off, said bye, and that was it. And my brothers were missing, and I only had one brother, and he was just as confused as I was. And we didn't know what to do. I mean, so... I took it in stride as best as I could. I returned back to my school, which was the only normal left for me at that point, were my friends. My mother was actually committed to a psych institution because she was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, which I did not, her alcoholism must have covered that because, it wasn't something that presented itself openly. But again, getting back to my sense of normal, that was also being ripped away from me because this foster family was moving with us to the next county. And I didn't know anything about this county other than my friends would be gone. And so I decided that I was going to run away and, I didn't make it more than 2 miles down the road, but in a country setting, that's pretty far. So I was picked up and, brought back to this family, and eventually we moved. And now this is where race comes into play. A white family doing their best, hearts of gold, but this was the beginning of the hip-hop culture, and, the kids are wearing jerseys and nice Nike shoes and whatever they're rapping about back then. And I didn't get the memo. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I was dressed in a polo shirt, mm-hmm. Wrangler jeans, so very tight jeans. They weren't the loose-fitting, baggy thing that they were wearing.
Right.
And off-brand tennis shoes.
Oh.
And a messed-up haircut. Nothing like the nothing that was trending at the time for young black boys.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a target from day one.
Mm.
Without getting into it too much, I spent my year, the only thing I learned that fifth grade year was growing a set of eyes in the back of my head.
Mm.
And it destroyed my soul. But as much as it destroyed my soul as a child, it really formed my outlook on race today. And what I mean by that is, I value diversity in all of its forms. The only two friends I had there at that school were white. And, it really made me question who I was for the longest time, but at the same time, it made me think about what other cultures are out there, because I was being rejected by mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I still needed to belong somewhere. It's a primal instinct. We all have to belong.
Right.
All right? And so I was looking for that sense of belonging wherever it may be. And, I ran into Bruce Lee, and I ran into country music and alternative rock. And, I was always looking for something. So now, as a result of that, I'm a very eclectic person. I love all forms of music and cultures that fascinate me. But moving on, they decided after that year, the social worker decided that it would be better to put me with a black family. Unfortunately, we didn't deal with my, anger issues. We didn't deal with anything that happened that year, and I didn't know how to process it other than becoming a rebel to society. And, keep in mind that throughout all of this, the 121 days missed, learning nothing in fifth grade. So now I'm significantly behind the curve at school. And I keep coming back to school, but I'll make a point with this, I promise. One of the most frustrating things and what made me give up on life in general at that point was that I felt like I knew nothing, right? So I was back in touch with my friends, but they were a lot smarter than I was. They were talking differently, and I couldn't keep up. The world around me, nothing made sense. Even though I was back in this familiar setting, none of it made sense. And I pushed through sixth grade, seventh grade, and now I'm up to high school. And we didn't have a middle school. This was Rappahannock County, Virginia. I get up there, and I immediately become defensive. You have to keep in mind, I'm a scrawny eighth grade kid, and I'm in the mix with these seniors and people who are a lot bigger than I am. But I'm determined that I'm not going to repeat the experience that I had my fifth grade year. And so I started fighting for no reason, and it was pretty tumultuous. And my foster mother, who had stuck with me up until my last report card period in ninth grade, where I was in danger of failing the ninth grade, she had that come to Jesus talk with me, and it was exactly what I needed to hear. I didn't want to hear it at the time, and I was upset at the time, but looking back and reflecting upon it, that was probably the moment that saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And we eventually had a falling out, but I do give her credit for that in the book. Because it was a wake-up moment. She was my last refuge, and at that point, she had given up on me. And I don't know what it was, but I just decided to come to. And after that talk, everyone went to bed, and I came back out to our living room, and I prayed. Now, we didn't go to church until my first foster family went to church, and I was baptized and saved, and then I go to my next foster mother, and she felt like the white church didn't do it right, and so I was baptized and saved again. And so one of the jokes I always make is that, not even God can save me. I've been saved twice, and, here I am. But that formed my religious experience, too, and what I think about it today. As much as I loathe organized religion, I love the philosophy of Christ, because it is a beautiful philosophy, as beautiful as Buddha or anything else that's out there. And it led me, I think, down the right path in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think of myself as a good person. But this moment was the first time that I prayed and felt like God or something higher, a higher being, was speaking directly to me. Mm-hmm. So when I came out of that prayer, I went to bed with an ease that I'd never felt in my entire life. And I came home, my books were jammed in my locker, didn't take them home all year. I packed everything in my book bags, and I studied for that six or seven weeks that was left, and I passed by the skin of my teeth.
Wow.
And then the following 2 years, I stayed on the honor roll, the AB honor roll. The last year, I mentioned that I was behind the curve. Geometry and chemistry just was too much to overcome. And so I ended up passing both of those with C's. But it was tough. And, I graduated in the middle of the pack, but I was as proud as a valedictorian standing up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be there.
Right.
And backing up a little bit, when I finally became interested in college, and my track and field coach at the time, he's the one who led me down that path. It was 10th grade. I was just starting to get really good at track and field, specifically the hurdling events and the relays. And so I was finally good at something, getting some self-esteem. And he said, "Have you thought about college?" Of course I hadn't thought about college, because I mean that just wasn't an option for anyone in my family. And so I go to my guidance counselor and tell him, what my plans are. And he, just with a straight face, said, "College isn't for people of your background."
Wow.
Yeah. And, the unfortunate reality is that this happens to a lot of kids. The more I tell this story, the more that this happens. And it seems to be across class and race
mm-hmm.
barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a shame, because how many people believe that and never reach their full potential?
Yeah.
Now, for me, it lit a fire under me. And I said, I'm going to prove him wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, 15 years later, I had a PhD.
Yep.
And I graduated, in my MBA program from the Dean's List. And so, he was right by one set of standards. I didn't do well on my SATs, and so I wasn't going to get into an Ivy League school, but most people from my location didn't. And the best performers, I went to college at Eastern Mennonite University, and a small private university, and then James Madison University, much bigger, much well-known. On the other side, I had several of my friends go there, but two of them dropped out. And, drinking and partying and all of this stuff. And I stuck with it and I graduated. But I'll stop there. But I just wanted to bring all of that into play, because education was my way out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we put too much focus on testing and making sure that everyone learns the same information. And that's important, but to a point. The reason I did not do well on those tests was because growing up in abject poverty the way that I did, I didn't have access to those words
mm-hmm.
that were on the verbal section.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just don't speak like that. Studies are showing that children in poverty learn or hear 10 to 12 million less words by age 5 than their middle class and upper class
mm-hmm.
peers. And so I was behind the curve probably until my junior year of college. when something just finally clicked, all of that reading, all of that adding, and you know, everything just finally clicked. But in 1999, only 3% of foster children succeeded in life. And I guess what that means is, you know, going on to graduate college and become a self-sustaining citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are 18 years later, that number is still the exact same.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at, okay, so 400,000 foster youth, give or take, all right, only 12,000 succeed. All right, what happens to those other 388,000? I mean, that's incarceration, that's teen pregnancy and continuing the cycle, homelessness, death, and we have to look at what we're doing. And the things that I did in school, they're arresting kids for now and throwing them in juvenile detention centers. And I feel like we're throwing away our future, mm-hmm. throwing away all of that potential, because there are more versions of me out there.
No.
And they can succeed, but they need someone to give them a hand up. You know, it's too much of the debate circles around, you know, giving these people handouts, and that's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I did not have food, or if I did not have access to, you know, health care and things that I needed growing up as a child, I wouldn't be here today.
Right.
And that's what I'd like to focus on.
Wow. Just an incredible story. One of hope as well for our youth. And so I want to talk about that for a moment. You say this, that the appeal of Broken Child, Mended Man is that it lacks an extraordinary element. And you say that is the point. And you say that I don't mean that my story is bland. Instead, my story of overcoming the odds and breaking the cycle is achievable. I didn't become a movie star, a pro athlete, or even a hotshot executive, so my story lacks glamour. However, my story has the grit that's necessary to keep the downtrodden pressing forward for a better day. My story was nothing extraordinary other than making a conscious decision to turn my life around at the last possible moment. So maybe for those young people who would be listening, give us some beginning steps that might help others who may not know where to start to turn their life around.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a saying that no man is an island. And what that means is that you can't do this by yourself. Humans evolved by coming together, supporting one another. And so don't try to go through this life by yourself, because if you do, you will certainly fall and there's no one there to catch you. So always make sure there's someone there to rely on, you know, not take advantage of, but someone who can give you advice to get through this life. Because for me, you know, when I graduated college, I aged out of the foster care system. And so now I'm going through life feeling my way through the dark. You know, I had my guardians to rely on. I had friends to rely on. And, you know, if it weren't for them, I wouldn't have succeeded in college. I mean, it's set up for your failure if you, you know, even if you're trying to succeed, there's so many things that you don't know that they don't teach you in high school, or that, you know, you didn't have parents, the luxury of having parents teach you. You need to be able to rely on people who have been through it before. And so getting a mentor, or, sticking with a group of friends that know, that's really that's probably the best piece of advice I can give. And the other thing is more internal. You know, always look at yourself as someone who overcame their circumstances. So what I mean by that is never look at yourself as a victim, right? Because that's self-defeating, right? And instead, I challenge those youth coming through these same circumstances to look at themselves as victors. Yes, what happened to me was terrible, but those circumstances don't define who I am today. Right? Today, I am a family man, so I broke that cycle. I never knew my father, but I'm a father to three children who I can't wait to see at the end of the day. I read them stories, I fix them breakfast, and I take absolute pride in that. Right? So I broke the cycle. You know, I've been married for 15 years, again, breaking that cycle. My mother was divorced twice, and I witnessed domestic violence. I witnessed her get beat by several men throughout my childhood, right? And I vowed to never do that to a woman. And I've been loyal and faithful to my wife for 15 years, and we have three beautiful children together. So today, I am a victor. That's who I am today, and that's who you have the potential to be. You may not be that movie star or that athlete that you see on television, but you can make a wonderful life for yourself.
Right.
It doesn't all have to be material-based. And that's what I thought. I thought it all had to be material-based. So when I turned 18, I got all these credit cards and I ran up all this debt trying to buy my happiness
mm-hmm.
and trying to buy my self-worth, and it's not there.
Right.
It's not there. It's internal. You have to learn to love yourself first, right, before others can turn around and express that same love to you. So what I mean by that is respect yourself, and things aren't going to provide that for you. Things only provide temporary happiness. It's really about people, surrounding yourself with the right people, and surrounding yourself with the right plan,
mm-hmm.
right? So put a plan in place. What do you want out of this life? And if it's not, if it doesn't happen, it's okay to have a backup plan.
Right, right. Basically finding your purpose. And you said it very well. You said circumstances don't define you, but they surely help create who you are or who you can become. And
absolutely.
So I think what you're sharing today is extremely important. And you also share this via your speaking events. Just give us a little peek into that in case folks would like to invite you to speak to their groups or organizations.
Yeah, sure. You can go to adamstarks.com, right? And I have, you can purchase my book on it at any major online bookseller, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all of those guys. And I have autographed copies on my website that I'll be glad to send to you. There's a speaking engagements you can sign up for. I'm happy to travel out anywhere and give a inspirational speech or whatever you need.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's so many ways we could have taken today's conversation, but I think just by you sharing your story and giving some advice to those listening just inspires so much hope and positivity. So before we head out, is there anything, though, that we missed that you would like to talk about today?
See, there's so much going on in the world today. I mean, so much uncertainty. And, you know, as we close on Child Abuse Awareness Month, I really want people to think holistically about where the direction we want this country to go. There are so many children out there who are victims of the drug epidemic, abuse, domestic abuse, and as adults, we really need to take a hard look at ourselves and what the future that we're leaving for our children. And I think it's upon us to bring them up in a way, even if it's not their parents, you know, even if they're not your kin, it's up to us to bring them up in a way that's going to leave this world a better place. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're too focused on making victims of everyone.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, you know, trauma is the term right now. Every child is traumatized. I read a study about, you know, children in timeout being traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of takes away from what I went through or what a
mm-hmm.
child that was sexually abused went through.
Yes.
And we can't make everyone victims, because that's going to take away from our resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have asked me, you know, if you could go back in life, would you change anything? Absolutely not, because it made me who I am today. I'm proud of, you know, the resilience and the grit that I've used to overcome my circumstances. And I think that, you know, I can use that strength to my advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But when we say that everyone is traumatized. We focus on the circumstances and let those circumstances define them.
Yep.
While it can certainly mold you during your formative years, that should not be their end, their end game. That's not the end of their story. So, you know, turn the page, turn the chapter. Broken man, broken child. Yes, I was broken, but then I was mended. Mm-hmm. And mended meaning it doesn't mean perfect, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I don't still harbor pain. I still suffer from depression, probably from those formative years, but that's not all that I am. And people need to understand that they have a wealth of potential that they're not tapping into, and the world needs them, and the world needs our children.
Oh my. Such words of wisdom there. I so appreciate that. And you talk about your book on your website, and I want to just read this last piece. Broken Child, Mended Man is a book for anyone having trouble with their current circumstances or just looking for ways to support the broken souls within their community. And I think that's extremely important, the whole idea of community. The positive message throughout the book will help any reader establish solid footing as they seek purpose and the will to persevere through life's hardships. And you surely have come out the other end and have been such an inspiration to everyone who knows you, and for sure everyone who reads your book. So Adam, thank you so much for sharing you and your story with us today.
You're most welcome. Thanks for the opportunity, Pat. I appreciate it.